From Knockadoom to Ardmore, so much to do and see. I'm delighted to welcome again our resident historian, Michael Brooks. Michael, you're very, very welcome to
the
program.
Thanks very much, Noel. Thanks. Good morning to everybody again.
And thanks for dropping in once again. This week, we're going to dwell on the life and times of Anna Marie Fisher, Haslam campaigner. She, of course, was Yall.
And you know, Noel, I keep saying, like, you know, sometimes when you kind of do a small bit about these things, you don't know enough. I don't even know enough about it until you actually kind of do a small bit of research. And this is what we kind of, you know, we ask people to do their own research as well into these things. And I keep saying, I'm amazed about the amount of really kind of famous people that passed through Yall and its surrounds, kind of in the close surrounds, Noel. And you know, the way, and even today, obviously there's yourself and, as I said, the two Micks, you know, Sheehan and Hussey, you know, absolutely famous people in Yall.
Well, but I have to take you to task here, because we're actually standing in the shoulders of giants, people that went before us.
Absolutely.
And I suppose the town is made up of characters like that.
But do you know, Noel, and you say, but even today, you know, I was looking there, Davy Russell, absolutely amazing gentleman altogether, recently retired. Well done, Davy, to, you know, your we're very proud of you here in Yall. The likes of Eddie Sullivan for the rugby. If you want to say
Christy Cooney was another
fantastic
man.
A guy probably not so well known, but I read a lot of his stuff as well, as a guy called Patrick Coburn, of the Coburn family.
Exactly, sure.
Patricia Coburn was his mother, wrote loads of books.
And of course, we've Colm Keane.
Ardmore, over Maramore way as well, from the Keens as well. And you know something, I have to say myself, Adam King.
Oh yes,
he would warm your heart on a very, very cold day. He's such a nice little young lad.
Well, actually, as you mention him now, actually, I saw young Adam on the stage out in Gortrue at the children's concert. And he was playing the part of a pirate. And you know something? He played it to perfection.
Yeah.
The antics and the tone, like he was, you know, he's a gem.
He's absolutely brilliant, and he's great for Yall.
Lovely character he is.
Every time you see him, he's smiling. You know the way. That's what you want to see the whole time. There's no, his spirit is always up.
Always up.
Fair juice to him. Always up. So I always have to say, I think he's brilliant anyway as well. But so many, as I said, so many guys, and all the people I've mentioned so far are all men, males, and that's why. Today and this morning, it's brilliant to mention about Anna Marie Fisher, because she, I didn't know enough about her, Noel, until I started doing it here. But she was an absolute campaigner. You know, recently we did about Canon Keller.
Yes.
And Canon Keller, what he went through, you know, for the people, the local people. This lady did it for Ireland, for the women of Ireland as well. And I just, you know, talk about a small bit of it.
Yeah.
And this is why, kind of coming up to the end of it, she died. Canon Keller, we spoke about him. He died, we recently did him, because he died in November on 1922, 100 years ago.
And incidentally, that particular programme actually will be aired on St. Stephen's Night here on Community Radio Yall.
Lovely job, yes.
So there you are, the whole programme.
And actually, Anna Marie Fisher herself, and Haslam, she was married, she died in November 1922.
My goodness.
So the two of them died in the same month, in the same year, just over 100 years ago. So we should celebrate Canon Keller, but especially as well Anna Marie Fisher as well. And she was just an amazing person.
She was, of course, came from a very affluent family here in Yall,
absolutely.
Wasn't she?
Like we mentioned again, because we spoke about it before, she was born in Yall, we'll say, in 1829. So this is, you know, she was there. She was the 16th of 17 children. So big families back
then.
Well,
of course, that was the thing, families.
It was very big families. Mm. And she was born to Jane and Abraham Fisher. The Fishers were Quakers. You know,
the name Abraham, they were Quakers. And we all know the tremendous contribution that the Quakers made to Yall here and during the famine times.
Listen, you know, they were noted, Noel, for their charitable works, especially, and you know, for us during the famine times, we know a lot of them went broke, and we'll come on to that as well afterwards. Anna herself helped in the soup kitchens. I was only reading it, I was on Barry's Lane there actually, and the posters, the little signpost is up there with about the Quakers helping out there, the soup kitchen that was there as well. So hopefully the council will do something with the soup kitchen to kind of celebrate that as well. It's good for us, for the history side of it as well. But she helped out there. But they also did, we'll say the Fisher Girls, there was a lot of Fisher Girls. What they said was lace making, crocheting and knitting.
Oh, yes.
And what they did was a cottage industry for the girls. And I think they had a kind of 100 girls working.
Oh, had they?
They had a huge amount of girls working there. So it was, you know, and it probably was work for food, because this is at the time of the famine. That's the way it was done. We'll say the slob bank was built.
Yeah, you had this government scheme as well. The banks, yeah, the slob banks and the quays were
the
built.
Keys.
Yeah,
and, yeah. And that's what we were even talking about, the lighthouses before, Noel, as well ourselves. Mm. Because these were all built in the famine times as well. There was Ballycotton, Yall and Minehead outside near Helvick. Yes. And so were the schemes, you know, the way. And then obviously the old prison, the Bridewell prison out by Tesco's.
Yes, Jerry Ross's place.
Jerry Ross's place.
Yeah.
It's Garden's, kind of going to be a garden soon, I suppose. That was all built again. That was all famine relief as well. Mm. So these brought in, and like,
much needed money for, I suppose, for people in town. Yeah,
but it,
yeah,
was, like, yeah. It was definitely for themselves. Like it was, you know, either probably that or the poorhouse then as well.
Yes.
At the time, the poorhouse wasn't still built in Yall, because it was 1852.
So was the poorhouse?
Yeah, they were heading to Middleton. So the poorhouse, kind of the closest to us at during the famine of the 1845, would have been Middleton was the big one.
Oh, there was none here?
No, and I think that it's Middleton Distillery now at this stage. It was part of the...
That, I think so, that was part of the poorhouse was part of their establishment. Yeah.
And in saying that, there was the auxiliary poorhouse. And I'd listen, again, to start this, I'd like to thank Mike Hackett, again, as always, Frank Keane.
Another gem, yeah.
And,
yeah, another gem, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Kieran Gregor as well,
of
for
course,
their,
yeah.
Because they gave me bits for this as well. And I didn't realise it as well. And it was Kieran Gregor was telling me that there was a lot of auxiliary poor houses. So these were houses around the place. And I'll go into one of them actually, because the Fishers had their houses out as poor houses, as auxiliary poor houses as well. So there could be a lot of auxiliary poor houses in Yall.
And as I said, they were a very, very affluent family. They had a number of premises in town.
They had indeed. They had indeed. And we come on to that as well and things. Mm. Because I think we'll say what they were saying was Abraham Fisher, he was born in Yall as well. And what they said was Springfield. And I thought Springfield out by Mick Farrell's pub, you know, the way of Farrell's pub or something like that. But I think it was Springfield House. Now, there's a difference between Springfield and Springfield House. And this, I might be wrong in this one, and I'm hoping people that know better than me will come along and say, listen, you know, this is where he was born and all this. But Springfield House is at Sweetfield Estate, you know, the house across the road. And I know it well, because we used to live, we'll say, in Sweetfield at the time, 21 Sweetfield.
Yes.
And right across the road, we called it Galvin's House.
Galvin's
place, the farm. Yeah. It looked like the farm.
Yes.
But, I can go on to it later on, why they were saying that they definitely owned it that at some time as well.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's called Springfield House. And I actually Googled it last night, Springfield House, Yall. And Google Maps brought you straight onto that house.
Ah, yes.
So I think
yes.
when they said Springfield, I thought it was Springfield by Farrell's, but I don't think so. I think it was Springfield House, which is the old house from the Galvins.
I
don't know who owns there. Are Galvins still living in that house? I'm not sure. I know they live beside it in the newer house as well. Anyway,
yes,
so
yes. I think we always know it as Galvins.
Galvins,
anyway.
Because we played in the forestry. You know, we call it the forest.
Yes,
a few trees. There was probably 30 trees there. For us, it was the forest.
Yes. Of course, he was an optician here in town. And
that's right.
He was very much into gardening as well.
That's right. He did all the tents out there, the
glass house, the greenhouse, and tunnels.
Just to say the Abraham was born there. His wife then, Jane, she was born up in she was a Welsh lady. She was one of the Moors from Wales as well.
Yes.
As I said, there was a lot of kids inside in
But as I say, the very fact, I suppose, that Haslam, I suppose, and the name Haslam, of course, was associated with the Quaker movement here in town. And she was, again, she had a background, I suppose, on account of her suffragette attitude. She was brought up by her parents, believing, I suppose, again, in equality for men and women. And she also supported the campaign against slavery.
She did. And this actually, Noel, came from the actual parents, because the parents were anti-slavery well.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They were all campaigners.
So she had that background. Like, she had a very strong background.
She had a very strong background. Yes. And even when she married, she had even a stronger background, and yeah. easy way to say
yeah.
it as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, her parents were absolute campaigners against the likes of slavery, against poverty and all this as well. But she grew up, you know, as a big family, but I suppose, you know, they were kind of an affluent family as well. So she went to school in Waterford, I think, was it Newtown School? Again, I'll go back to that again. She left there and she became a teacher's assistant. So she went over to England and she was a teacher's assistant in a school called Ackward School in Yorkshire.
Oh, yes.
And there she met the love of her life, a guy called Thomas Haslam.
Yes.
And he was teaching, we'll say, he was the teacher there at the time, and the two of them struck up an old relationship.
Relationship, and love blossomed, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And Thomas actually, they met in Yorkshire, but he was actually an Irishman as well.
Mm.
So he was born in Mumellick, and Mumellick in County Laois. And it was, Mumellick now is, it's only about 10, 15 kilometres away from Port Laois itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Small kind of town still to this day. I know it very well because my mother is actually a Conroy from Mumellick.
Ah.
And Mumellick actually was the first of the Quaker towns.
Oh, I see.
So, like, the Quakers, just to kind of give a background on that one, I can't think of the guy's first name, but I think it was a guy called Fox. Kind of made the Quakers, we'll say.
Instigated the movement,
The society. It is the Society of Friends. But what it was they were, you know, because if you think of it, Noel, this was kind of Cromwell's time as well. So this was like, Cromwell was here in 1649 to 1650. The Society of Friends was brought about in 1652, so 2 years later, you know, the way that Cromwell was obviously gone home at that stage. So the Puritans were there, the Protestants were there, the Catholics were there, and the Society of Friends, then he introduced the Society of Friends. So they're still here.
And I suppose at the time when they performed, I suppose they did realise the devastation that was in Ireland after Cromwell.
Well, this is probably one of the things where they were very charitable, you know, they could see what went on, you know, the way, and not through just Ireland, I suppose. Like, if you think of it, the revolution was in England. There was a civil war in England same time.
Yeah.
It was the parliamentary against the royalists. Here, it was the Confederates initially against the royalists, who then joined together with the royalists to go against the parliamentaries.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Michael Toomey will know a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, they were all fighting for each other, basically, the bottom line. Yeah,
it was just one of these ones as well. So you could see, like, and we talked about it there, because one thing Mumellick is very, very famous for to this day is Mumellick lace, and one thing Yall is very famous for is Yall lace. Now, I believe for the Yall side of it, like, definitely the Mumellick side of it, it was the Quakers that brought it in. And I was just saying about this guy, Mr. Fox, brought it around the Society of Friends, but they were brought to court. They were, you know, the because it was, whether you were Catholic or Quaker, didn't matter to the courts. He was brought to court about it, and he told the judge that he should quake in the presence of God. And this is where the Quakers,
the name came from,
the Quakers.
Yes,
that we should be all quaking in the presence of God, you know the way.
Yes.
So this is where the Quakers actually got their name from. They were called the Quakers then afterwards.
Yes.
But it stuck with them, you know the way. It was
the
just
name
one of these,
stuck. Yeah, yeah. The Quakers.
And they know themselves as the Quakers, you know the way.
Yes.
That's the whole
amazing
thing as well.
Amazing, isn't it? So now we know for the name. But they were expelled from the society, both Thomas, wasn't they?
But they were, well, what it was.
They were were they too radical?
Well, they were very radical. And now, I suppose, if you look at it, there was a lot of things with the Quakers that if you owed money, you weren't allowed to remain inside the Quakers. But if you think of it, it wasn't really a big deal for them, because the simple fact that, we'll say, Thomas was kicked out for his radical ideas. He wrote loads of books and different things. We'll go into it as well. And it was actually because then Anna married him, she had to be expelled. Because,
of course, yeah.
So they couldn't, we'll say, normally they'd have the wedding, we'll say, up in the Society of Friends in the meeting house. Yeah. Now the meeting house, again, to everybody that didn't hear that one, is, for our one, is on Ash Street. It's the old Carnegie Library. The carpets.
The GA carpets.
Everybody had, there was discos and everything there. It's still there as well. It's privately owned now by Robin next door. But it's still there, you know the way. And they would have normally got married there. But the Quakers thing, anyway, was that the prayer was done at home. It wasn't in big cathedrals or anything like that. It was all kind of very, very simple. Everything is simple. their graves are even very, very simple. They're not allowed huge graves or anything like this, yes, either, Noel. And that's why beside the Carpet Club, we call it today still, there is a small graveyard there as well. And but it's very simple graves. You know, the way every, their uniform, we spoke about this before, yeah, uniform graves as well.
They shunned, I suppose, basically what the Christian church stood for in the sense of statues and churches.
Absolutely, yeah.
They shunned all that.
And it was all simple. And this is where we'll say Thomas and Anna were basically kicked out of the Quakers.
Yeah.
But they remained in the Quakers. They remained, and all their friends. So it wasn't like they were extradited, you know, the way that nobody could talk to them and that. It wasn't that kind of a way at all.
Yes.
It was that you just can't go up to the meeting house. That's it.
So something like the movement in America, isn't it? What's the name of the movement?
I used to, my brother lived in Pennsylvania for a Sean.
Pennsylvania, they were of German origin, wasn't it?
And it was, what did they call them? Jeez. And they go around in the horse and carts. Yes. And there's different, there's Mennonites and then there's the other ones as well. And one of them can use electricity but the other can't use electricity and all this kind
of
stuff.
Yes, there
were
so many different factions of them there.
And
yeah,
that's basically what I think that's the Quakers now as well at that stage.
Much the same thing as that, you see. Keep it simple. But again, I suppose the Quakers, I suppose they were very, very charitable to even people that were outside the Quaker faith, the Quaker movement.
Because obviously for the, it was mainly Catholics they were feeding, we'll say, during the famine time. Mm. And like even this goes down to her brother as well, over in Kinsale Beg at the time as well. But even as I said, for Thomas himself, just with Thomas Haslam, because they got married in Cork in the registry office, because they had to, because they couldn't use the hall here because they were back in Ireland. Thomas himself was a feminist theorist, and in 1868 he wrote like many topics concerning female rights and issues such as prostitution, birth control and women's suffrage.
He was basically a man that was way ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Like the two of them were kind of born to meet each other. This is the way I look at it. The way they were absolutely brilliant, the two of them. And do you know what? It's all baby steps. I always say you won't just solve every problem today. You know the way it takes bits and pieces, and it takes chipping away the whole time, Noel. And these are kind of like a couple that just chipped away the whole time at it. And a bit like her parents, they were chipping away at the anti-slavery and it came in, thankfully.
Yes.
And it was just all these different people that were chipping away the whole time and making a small difference, and a very small difference. Yeah. And Anna's thing the whole time, her main goal in life was to get women's vote at the time.
Yeah,
now, again, it wasn't just like men just couldn't vote back in even these times, because you had to have like businesses. There was all different things where even one person from the family could only vote. So it wasn't like that every man could vote. They couldn't either. You know the way. So it was kind of a bit for both. Possibly.
And she was so unique in a way ahead of her time, because if you look at the suffragist movement in England at the time, you see, that occurred around the 1900s.
Yep.
Anna Fisher was way ahead of that.
She was way, and we come to the end of it. She's even remembered in London now at the moment on the plinth, one of the famous plinths for the women's rights as well, as one of the pioneers. And what they said was, even for her when she died, there was a lot of breakaway groups, because there was radical ones. There was ones that wanted to be very pacifist.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, Anna wanted to be very pacifist because that was her nature, the whole thing. Mm. But there was fierce radical. You know, they were jumping out in front of the race courses in England and all that kind of stuff as well. She didn't want anything to do with that, but they said when she died, they all came together in grief for her as well, and pure respect for Anna Haslam as well. As I said, we don't know enough. You know the way I say, people in Yall don't even, you know, when I mentioned it a few times, they said, you know, who's she? You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And she should be on all the history books as well.
And as I say, I suppose her family, and of course she was originally Fisher, and of course, as we said at the outset, that the Fishers were very big. The Fishers, I suppose, were like the Flemings and the Farrells here. They owned so much property. Of course, we had Fisher's Mills across there. We talked about that before, the Fisher's Mills,
we'll say. And it was her father, we'll say, took it over really in the kind of the 1800s. The father took it over, and then her brother then took it over from the father and progressed it. And it was really that side of the family that actually built the mills as we know it today.
Yes, yes.
And the way, we'll say, I know it's a ruin over now at the moment, But it's fantastic just to drive down there and just to see it and the little cottages and all
and
that.
And of course,
kind of
she was, as they say, down in West Cork, she was well healed.
She was well healed.
She was well healed. You know, she came with substance. She was a woman of substance.
Which she
when
was,
when it came to, and when I say substance, from the monetary point of view and indeed from the intellectual point of view.
But the whole kind of, and what she kind of said as well, what kind of brought her into it was because when she was growing up, there was 17 kids, you know, and plus the mother and father, there's 19 of them. But they never, there was no kind of, oh, the men are, you know, better than you or anything like that. Everybody in the family was equal. So she couldn't understand why, you know,
outside the family business or outside the family home, like that there was such a disparity between men and women.
Wait a minute. And even one of the things we'll say with the Quakers they were saying was, you know, back when they started off down the street, if a gent was coming down and a lady was coming down, you had to tip your hat. It was by law. And they refused to do it. This is why they ended up in court a lot, because they refused. They wanted to look everybody in the eye as an equal, not to be tipping their hat at somebody who has a bit of money, you know, the way they didn't go down that road. And that was, there was court cases and everything about people not showing respect to the gentry, you know, this kind of it was they were just,
and even the Quaker movement, I suppose, was steeped in that because it came from a long tradition. So you can easily see how they were, we say, drummed out basically, or distance from, made themselves distance from the Quaker movement on account of their radical notions.
Absolutely.
I suppose.
But even, I suppose, for Anna herself, like, she's just so well today. If you said one thing, it's the vote for women. That's what she went after the whole time, was the vote for women. And, you know, because of her, no, and listen, you know, it would have happened anyway at some point. But she brought it in earlier, because and what she did was they went, I thought it was a good way of doing it. They did kind of earlier, small steps, as I kept saying it. So one of the first things was the poorhouses. They wanted all the guardians, all the heads.
The poor law guardians, at the time,
they were all men. You know, the way every one of them were men.
Yes.
So then kind of they worked on that side of it, and then they actually got, and I think it was in 1896, Noel, that they got the right that women should be the guardian and should have been the guardians of the poorhouses.
Exactly.
Looking after people, like, you know, the way, who better to do it as well. And then what they said was in, by 4 years later, by 1900, there was over 100 of the poorhouses in Ireland run by women then at that stage. So they could see, hang on a sec, these are definitely the best people
to run
the establishment, like,
yeah,
as well.
Was she the only, well, I suppose, to be quite fair, I suppose she was one of the leading lights in the country, but she probably wasn't alone, was she?
She wasn't, she, because what it was, they herself and Thomas, will say, moved to Dublin.
Yes.
And I think he worked, was it, I don't know, was it, I was going to say CIE or something like that, but he worked for a while, but I think he was ill health. But he was a writer, he was writing books still about different and campaigning, basically.
Yes.
He was still campaigning the whole time. They had a big support, but what they did was they were the founding members of what's called the DWSA, and that was the Dublin Women's Suffrage Association.
Oh yes.
And this is known as in 1876. So remember, going back to Father Keller as well, Canon Keller's time, this is all around the same time as the what was happening in the Land League and all the bits and pieces that were going on with the, you know, the way, and there was a lot of agitation in Ireland.
Yeah, and what you had and what you got, the picture I'm getting is that at that time, we said from the 1850s on, society was slowly changing. And of course you could say that part, I suppose, with the Industrial Revolution in England. People's attitudes were changing, and indeed Ireland's attitudes were slowly changing. People were beginning to question, whereas they didn't before.
But and you said it there earlier, this all happened in Ireland before it did happen in England. Great Britain, the UK. So it happened in Ireland because it was all these people, and you could see there were, you know, I suppose people were just, we said it the last time with Canon Keller's, they were just getting fed up. You know the way, there was, I think after the famine, it was just, that was the catalyst. That was definitely the big straw that broke the camel's back at that stage.
Probably was.
And everything was going downhill for the English government then at that stage. And there was all these different people who were just niggling away, and she was brilliant.
The British at the time, I suppose, like when you see the people like Anna Haslam there, like, and indeed take a little step further, Countess Markovitch and these people, the British establishment didn't know how to handle it.
Exactly.
They didn't know how to handle it.
Because if you think of it, all these lords, little guys and fat guys in big suits,
big
bowler hats
and the whole
huge mansions and all that.
Yeah.
they didn't understand it. You know, the way these people were here, they were looking as equals to everybody.
Yes.
You know, poor and rich and everything like that. Well, the gentry's guys hadn't a clue because they were just so apart from reality.
Of course.
They didn't understand. You know, the way let him eat cake as what was it, the French queen said.
Exactly. But how did they actually end up, or what was the outcome, I suppose, of Anna Haslam's movement?
Well, I suppose we'll say the first bit was, we'll say, the Guardians to get him in. And as I said, that was kind of in the late 1800s then as well at that stage. Then she went for a little further. She actually kind of led a campaign then to encourage qualified women, and I'll come back to the qualified women bit, to stand for elections, we'll say, in 1898. And they didn't win full elections like a TD today, but what they did was they won the eligibility to vote in the local government elections. So, you know, the councillors and all this kind of thing, local town councillors. So you could stand, and what they said was qualified women. Qualified women, I think then at the time, was defined as a woman who owned her own house or went to university. You know, came out of university.
Yes.
So you, I suppose what they wanted was, you know, a woman with means if they had their own house or educated, you know the way.
Yes.
So they were allowed then to. So it was still not there, but it was breaking the...
It was breaking it down slowly.
And it was, in fair, and we'd say they kept on going. Mm. And we'll say for herself, she was getting older and older at the time, obviously, and all. So in 1913, she stepped down as secretary of the association that she led for many years, but she was elected life president, you know the way. So that was the respect. It was a huge group, you know, the way at the time. And we'll say they said Dublin, but it was all over Ireland at the time. Mm. But it was great because in 1918, she was almost 90 years of age at this stage. And what happened? She went to the polls to vote. So in her 90s, just up to her 90s, they said a car came to her, collect her, and brought her down to the polling station. And they said the amount of people that were there, it was a huge crowd there. There was flags, there was cheering, there was the whole lot, there was flowers given as well. Bit sad because her husband, Thomas, died the year before, so he didn't get to see.
He didn't get to see the crowning glory of her endeavours down through the years. My goodness!
Because, but she won it, and then, as we said earlier on, she like Kenan Keller as well. He died in November 1922, or just over 100 years. Anna Fisher Haslam, she died in November 1922. But if you think of it, then this was just the start of the Free State. So the Brits had left, and the Free State had begun. And what it was then the Irish Free State extended the vote to all men and women over 21.
That was
in 1922.
Yeah.
So like it was just fantastic what she did. And do you know something? Anybody who's up in Dublin, please go into St. Stephen's Green. It's a fantastic place. If you're shopping up Grafton Street, just at the top of Grafton Street, you have the famous St. Stephen's Green. Go into the middle of it. And what it is, there's a memorial seat to Anna and Thomas Haslam. It was erected in 1923, so a year after she died. So this is how famous she was, Noel. And it's in St. Stephen's Green. And there's an inscription about it. She's also, what I was saying earlier on, there was I don't know this lady in England. It was a Millicent Fawcett, and she was a famous woman's right as well. There's a big statue of her in Parliament Square in London. And on that, there is the 58 women suffrage supporters. Their pictures, their photographs, and their names. And obviously, Anna Fisher Haslam is one of them.
It's
as well.
Up there.
So it's this.
She's
woman,
remembered for all time.
Absolutely brilliant. But even, Noel, we were talking about the Fishers, the connection, we'll say, with Youghal Kinsale Beg. And I won't keep you too long now here at all, this one. We'll say, but as I said, Springfield, Abraham was born in Springfield, which is, I think, Springfield House.
Yes.
Obviously, the Fisher family would say with the Kinsale Beg and all this kind of stuff. And we know kind of that bit about the Piltown Mills. The son then would say Peter Moore Fisher was Anna's brother. He took over, as we said, Kinsale Beg. But he also, he actually owned it. What to say now is, we say here, it says, according to the commercial directories at the time, Peter Moore Fisher, because Moore is the mother, Fisher is the father, and his brother, was involved in the following enterprises: milling business at Piltown Mills in Kinsale Beg, which we know about. He was also a baker, a corn merchant and a butter merchant. And this was at 71 North Main Street, Yall. And we know this shop, it's still there, Concho's Auctioneers.
My goodness.
So good morning, Dermot and Mairead as well there. So 71 North Main Street, that's where the brother lived. Yes. And then, very close by, and another of Anna's brothers, Joseph Fisher, and he was listed as a tallow chandler, which is a candle maker. You see, and you hear about the different jobs that they, you know, what they were into. It wasn't just one. It was
just a huge enterprise.
It was absolutely huge. Because, like, and he did oil, a colourman. He was oil and colourman, which I don't know what the colourman is. He was also a bookseller and a stationer. And he lived, or he worked in, his place was 75 North Main Street, which was Don Harton's shop across from Calflavin's.
My goodness.
So, and they're still there. And you can
still
see him.
And they're still there.
You know the way. And as I said, the only thing was, in 1865, think of it, in 1855 was kind of just the ending, coming up to the ending of the famine times.
Yes.
So in 1865, 10 years later, Peter Moore Fisher, who we mentioned with Kinsale Beg, we'll say, with the mills, he went bankrupt. And this guy alone is brilliant. Again, go back to the Kinsale Beg website as well. It's all inside there about the Fishers. But he was an absolute genius as well. Like his sister, a guy that's just underrepresented, we'll say. And what he did was, he set up soup kitchens over in Kinsale Beg. Yes. And then they set up a school as well over in Kinsale Beg as well. They don't really know where the school was. I would say where the old school was, you know the way.
Possibly.
Where, because this, you know the way, it's the hall now at the moment.
Yes.
For me, this is the likely spot for it, because it's not that long ago. As you said, all their houses are still there.
Yeah.
So I'd say this building is still there, and it's probably, for me, that building, but I wouldn't be too sure.
But it was a school anyway. It was a school.
And but what was it? It started. But when, as I said, what, it was a school, but not just for Quaker school. It was a school for everybody.
For everybody,
No, just for yourself. Like, we'll say today, the Quakers. I don't think anybody really knows or has a neighbour who's a Quaker or a Society of Friends. There isn't too many in Ireland at this stage, because we just said it there. A lot of them did go bankrupt, Noel, especially after the famine, because a lot of their money went in famine relief.
Yes.
And you still need money for your businesses.
Of course, yeah.
You
so
find the, out then afterwards then.
The business suffered.
The business suffered. And a lot of them went to America then. As you said, we went to different places, like Pennsylvania was one of the main places. But there is about, what they said was, just check this one as well. They said there's about 1,500 Quakers still living in Ireland today. And a lot of their business still remain today as well. And anybody with a sweet tooth would know their businesses, because their businesses, we'd say the Quaker businesses, would have been Bewley's, Jacob's Biscuits, Cadbury's, which we mentioned the last time as well, Rowntree. And I mentioned Rowntree because one of the Rowntree girls got married up in Ash Street in the things. No, I don't know if it's this week.
Yeah.
It was one of the local, I think it was one of the local fishers got married to one of the Rowntrees.
So the money followed money.
They actually, and the wedding was above.
Was above in the old library.
Yeah, the old library.
And there was a Kellogg's. Was another one,
Kellogg's, because he was especially in America. He was in the American, but here even Fry's chocolate. No, you know Cadbury's took over Fry's chocolate afterwards. But outside the sweet tooth people, Goodbody Stockbrokers is a Quaker business, and Clark Shoes. So these are all Quaker businesses that were set up by the Quakers and still running today, very, very good. You know the way.
And we owe it all to the Quaker movement.
The Quaker movement, we'll say, but even the vote for women.
And Anna Haslam.
As early it was, it was the likes of Anna Haslam. You know the way. Absolutely amazing woman, who should, you know, we should have a little plaque and everything about her.
You took the words off my mouth, because as I said, like, you know, in St. Stephen's Green, there's a monument to her.
A monument.
Right.
In London, there's a monument to her.
And have we anything here for
nothing.
Her?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, no.
Yeah.
No, listeners.
Yeah.
We'll park it there, listeners. Yeah, we'll park absolutely. It there with a question. Surely, pity goodness, this woman that did so much, I suppose, for the community and indeed so much for, we said, the feminist movement here in Yall, in Ireland, all over the place. She's remembered everywhere but Yall.
Absolutely.
Is it high time that we had a little plaque or something up somewhere?
Just to put it up. And do you know something, Noel? And I don't want to, one thing I don't like to do is get into rants, but can I have a small rant?
By all means, you have the airwaves, Mike.
Well, one rant is, we're talking about it there all the time, was the Quaker Meeting House, and beside it is the Quaker Cottage, what we call, known as the Quaker Cottage. Guys, the Quaker Cottage has been empty, you know, with all the housing that's, you know, that's needed so badly in Ireland at the moment by everybody. At the moment there's 11,000 Irish people on homeless. There's 4,000, nearly 4, I think it's 3,800 children that are homeless. We have homes here. That's, now we always say council owned, but the council is us. We are the people that paid for these houses, and they're sitting idle. I think there's two down below as well in the old almshouses across from Farrell's. We'll say there, the Red House. I think there's two empty as well. Listen, to come up with the excuses always of insurance, fire insurance, this insurance, or whatever it is. That's, you know, for me, it's fair enough. Like, but they have these. But if you can't, you know, if the council or whoever in there, now I don't think this is Yall, by the way, because I know everyone down there, because I wouldn't sleep if it was me, and I know these people and they're very good people. This is probably coming from Cork or something like that, Cork County Council, to leave Meidle just empty. And it just breaks my heart, especially that little cottage up there. It was recently done up. It's got all oil heating. It's got everything, new windows, new everything, just sitting there empty. I think it's about 6-7 years now at this stage, Noel. And the excuse is the usual, insurance, fire. Well, fair enough, but if he can't use it, give it to somebody.
Peter
McFerry, there's lots of different associations. But even if they can't use it, sell the house. Because I can use it, you can use it, Noel. But especially the young people in Yall can use it. But and they can't buy a house in Yall.
Yeah, but it's like the killing thing about it, it's going into dereliction.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, again, I know we say it's actually owned, we'll say, I would imagine the deeds rest with Cork County Council.
Cork County Council.
Right. But that's one thing. But if you look at a bone of contention while we're at it, if we're talking about vacant properties, all you have to do is walk down the South Main Street there and see the vacant properties.
Unbelievable.
There's trees growing out of broken windows there, and it's an absolute disgrace. Yeah. Now, I would have thought that the council had the automatic right to slap some kind of a CPO on these and say, look, no matter who owns them, get him done.
It's all there, Noel, but they won't. For whatever reason, this is not happening. And you know the way, it'll happen in every... I couldn't imagine in Killarney or Kinsale this happening.
Exactly.
This is just Yall at the moment, you know the way. But as I said, these are houses that people can live in.
This is what the whole thing is.
And forget about all your politics and whatever it is. Just get people into these houses, you know the way. If you can't, for whatever rules the council has, but the council is us. You know, we hire these people to run our town, you know the way, and our county, we'll say, for Cork County Council. We hire these people. It's our taxpayers' money, and it's our taxpayers' money that pays for these houses. We want them lived in. You know, we just don't want them derelict, and no matter what excuse they can come up with, it's just not an excuse anymore.
Well,
because
the powers that be, if you're listening, please take note.
Please do.
Please take note.
That's the end
but
of my rant.
Get it. Thanks for that, Michael. I know that we've run out of time, but I suppose finally again, I suppose it would be an idea while we're talking about ranting and the whole lot. It would be a nice idea to put up some little bit of a plaque somehow
to an official,
just to acknowledge the huge contribution that she made to this country to Yall.
Every single, we'll say, you know, as I say, for every woman in Ireland, but for the men in Ireland, because obviously she was plugging away. Certain men couldn't have a vote either, so she was plugging away for everybody, herself and her husband Thomas. Other people were doing it as well, Noel, let's be honest about it. But they were knowing to be the best. You know, they were the instigators, the whole from start to finish, all their lives, the Tubin campaign. Fantastic.
Well, we have a plaque for Captain Ahab.
Yeah.
Right?
And deserve it.
We have a plaque for Danny Douche. So now, what about a plaque for Anna Hassler?
We'll have to sort out something.
Listen, Mike, great to have you in.
Thanks very much for your contribution.
As I always say, still the gaze and still the one to grow at all he had and all the knowledge he had. And of course, that's Mike. Mike, you'll be back with us again very, very soon.
Very soon. Thanks very much again.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks.
Bye now.